The Guardian. Football Weekly.
Slicker than a Fulham shirt on a balmy day, it's Football Weekly. Today, Premier League goes 6-0-tastic. The pod salutes the men behind the goal bonanza. Theo Walcott, young like Ndubs and just as unplayable. Andy Carroll, he caught good service. And Joey Barton, give that man a cigar. On second thoughts, maybe not. Chelsea got 6-2, but that was against Wigan. Elsewhere, and speaking of Barton, what's the similarity between Spurs and Joey? They're both grateful for Bale, as Gareth scores stunner in Tottenham win at Stoke. Plus, Fulham Man United. Redder uses loaf, earns toast after late equaliser. All the weekend's Premier action rounded up today. Elsewhere, the Championship. Bellamy gets dream debut, QPR continue their perfect start, and Edgar Davids turns back on life of punditry and knitwear for Crystal Palace shop. There's Post and everybody's favourite go-to German, Raphael Honigstein, with his Bundesliga beauties. All of that in Football Weekly. Hello, world. Here with us today, indeed, it is. Hello, Raphael Honigstein.
Hello, James Richardson.
Hello. Thanks for remembering a podcast that knew you back when you were little. Yeah. James Dart.
Hi, James.
Hi there. You're on board with a tip-top Champions League roundup, a championship roundup.
Apparently so, yes.
Yeah, indeed so. And Barry Glendening on Vibes.
Hello.
Excellent. What an exciting weekend in the Premier League. As you were saying to me, Barry, when I walked in this morning, you said, I am so excited about this weekend in the Premier League. It's extraordinary, isn't it? Three 6-0s.
That's not really what I said to you, was it?
Well, it was more or less. That's the gist of it, though.
It was great.
It was fantastic. Weekend.
It was super duper. Lots of goals. I watched 6-0 Chelsea beat Wigan. And I did the minute-by-minute commentary. And I don't know what it is about doing Wigan games. It's just, they really do suck the life out of me altogether. I don't know if it's the atmosphere or the lack of atmosphere at the DW Stadium. It looked about half full on TV, and that's with the champions visiting. I don't know if that's just because it's mainly a rugby league town or just people can't afford to go or whatever. But you would think a 6-0 game would be very exciting, and this one wasn't. And the sad thing for Wigan is they actually played quite well and bossed the game in the first half. They had the majority of the possession. They were outpassing Chelsea. I think the stats were like they had 60-something percent possession compared to Chelsea's 35 or 36. But just collapsed in the second half, and the future looks very bleak for them.
Were they not 3-0 down at half-time?
No.
But then, when did they get 3-0? That was in the second half. Soon after half time. All right, that's amazing. How about another amazing stat, James?
Another amazing stat: no corners in the game.
No corners.
Apparently, the first time it's ever happened since the age of corner statistics began in 2003-2004.
Right. Ask your parents about that.
Yes.
One. Yeah.
That was probably the most exciting thing about the game, because with 15 minutes to go, my main concern was that there would not be a corner, and I was getting more excited about nobody putting the ball out over their own line than I was about the actual goals going in.
All right. Well, lots of other things to enjoy in that game. A 6-0 win. Often, in fact, when Chelsea win with really big scorelines, Didier Drogba's not on the score sheet, and that was the case again. This time, although his passing was fantastic, the one he put through to himself I thought was particularly fine. And here's another interesting stat. Chelsea have now scored 30 league goals, home and away, without answer. Since they last conceded a goal, they've scored 30 themselves. They've made the best start ever to a league campaign since 1888, with 12 goals scored and none conceded. Are Paddy Power paying out yet? That's the question.
I wonder if some Russian hackers fixed the fixture list, perhaps before the start of the season, because they've got Stoke, West Ham and Blackpool next. It's going to be really tough to keep it less than 6 in each of them.
Yeah, well, interesting. Wigan, in the meantime, have a trip to Spurs away. Before that, they have a midweek Carling Cup game away to Hartlepool. And, if they were to lose that with Roberto Martinez, what chance would you give his career prospects?
It wouldn't look very good for Match of the Day's new fancy titles, given that Roberto Martinez joins the supposed pantheon of legends.
How does he figure in on that?
I think he's throwing the ball back as the ball goes out for quick turnaround. But yeah, alongside the likes of Gabriel Agbon Lahore and other legends. But he probably wouldn't necessarily be hiding around that kind of company for much longer if it continues this way.
It's just bizarre that I think 2-3 years ago, the idea of games ending 6-0 or 9-2 or something in the Premier League would be unthinkable. And now it's almost every single week that you have a result like that. You wonder if the difference between the good teams and the bad teams is getting bigger. It shouldn't really, because the good teams have spent less money.
Choppy Chops says, quick question for the pod. Having watched Arsenal and Chelsea on Match of the Day 2, I wonder if such a gigantic distance in quality exists between top and bottom of league anywhere else in Europe. Raphael?
You wouldn't see 6-0s and 9-2s in the Bundesliga. It's been a long time since you've had regular occurrences of these kind of results. I can't think of one.
Another question for you. Who's the pants monster? I know you've got a lot of inside info on the Chelsea setup, and somebody is regularly cutting holes in Chelsea underpants. Lampard says he thinks he knows who it is, but until he has proof...
My sources have dried up a little bit over the summer, strangely enough, with people coming and going.
Right. Interesting. Anyway, now, well, there you go. Chelsea, that was the 6-0 that we didn't find thrilling for some reason, but we certainly did find Newcastle's amazing destruction of Villa. Highly entertaining. I'm sure Villa fans didn't, but it was extraordinary. I remember looking at the team sheet as the game got underway and thinking, wow, Villa actually with Ireland in that looks a really top lineup. I quite fancy them. And lo and behold, they did brilliantly. Brilliantly. Yes.
Spectacularly defensive ineptitude, I think, from Villa. I mean, of the 3 6-0s this weekend, I think Villa's defensive display was the worst of the three. And that's not to take completely away from Newcastle, as much as it sounds like it does sound like it's taking it away from Newcastle. I mean, it was a great performance from Andy Carroll up front. Not putting Richard Dunn on Andy Carroll just gave him them have his way with the middle of the defence. And I mean, Dunn was pretty shocking for the rest of his performance anyway. It was just a bad day at the office for everyone involved with Villa, I think. But as soon as they missed that penalty from Carew, Newcastle just bullied them away, and fair play to Carroll. He's been looked at by Franco Baldini, and there was mention of him making the England long list ahead of the World Cup. And when you saw Carlton Cole's performance at the weekend, there's not really a whole lot of comparison at the moment. He's going to be there or thereabouts for Fabio Capello's next squad, you would suspect.
All right. The other six goal scorers, Arsenal, their biggest ever win at the Emirates, Theo Walcott. Extraordinary how, and Harmony Smurf asking us to comment on this, extraordinary how his performance was taken as more evidence by Alan Hansen that he doesn't have a footballing brain. How is that possible?
How's it possible?
Yeah. What was wrong with Theo Walcott's performance?
Because he wasted at least two goal-scoring positions where he should have probably put in either taken his chance or laid off.
Right,
the
and no striker's ever done that before.
Exactly. I mean, he's got a hat-trick. Give him a break this weekend, I think. But if it's 0-0 and he's made that mistake, then you can rip into him. But they had 24 chances. They scored 6. So you're going to rip into the other sort of 16 opportunities that they should have scored.
It was against Blackpool. Was that the key thing? Or was Walcott really made the step up?
Well, it was Blackpool, and it was Blackpool who had a player sent off after 32 minutes. So you can't really, I think, read that much into it. Also, Ian Holloway was honest enough to say, I think even with 11 men on the pitch, we would have lost. So that gives you, I think, an indication in the difference in class between the two teams. Walcott was great. And I think James is right. You know, what people forget is that these kind of players, they create chances and they create one-on-one situations where more often than not, it's not going to come off. But that's not the point. The point is that 2 or 3 times it's going to come off and it's going to decide the game for you. I mean, Ian Robin does nothing else for Bayern. And I'd say 8 out of 10 times he probably makes the wrong choice and chooses the wrong option, goes the wrong way. But doesn't ultimately matter because he still decides the game more often than not.
The thing is, Walcott is only 21 years old. It's just he's been around for a long time. But he's still just a kid, and he will learn. You know.
Well, apparently, you can't teach a footballing brain. That's the thing, says Alan Hansen. So, no chance for Theo Walcott.
Yeah, I mean, I just say just a word on Blackpool. I think what it highlighted was I think they're going to really struggle against the best pace in the Premier League. That's the difference, I think, where they're going to struggle with the teams that are a bit more sluggish, and they're going to win points off other teams at the bottom. I think they are. But against the real top-level pace, that's where they get exposed.
What about this deal for Sebastian Squillaci? £5 million. Is he any good, Squillaci?
I saw him described as a veteran defender, which is a bit harsh. As a 30-year-old, I think it makes us all feel a little bit harsh, creaking. And then, but I don't know. I think any sort of strengthening that Arsenal can do to the centre of defence is going to help them. But in terms of whether or not he's the best person, we'll have to wait and see.
Hearing that you're a 30-year-old makes me feel even more creaky.
Oh, I'm older than 30.
Oh, good, right.
What did you make of Marouane Chamakh's performance? I can't decide on the strength of that showing whether he's really, really good or really, really terrible. He put himself in a position to score a hell of a lot of goals, but only got one.
While we've got our thumbs in the air, about Chicharito?
We just don't care.
Indeed. What do we think about Chicharito? Is it a thumbs up or a thumbs down so far?
Thumbs up for me, but mainly on the strength of what I saw of him playing for Mexico.
Right.
I think he'll be an excellent signing for Manchester United.
We're moving on here to the Fulham-Man United game, and Man United, of course, dropping silly points there at Craven Cottage. Cracking game, very dramatic final half hour. Lots of things to love about this. Zamora's cutback for the, for the Fulham equaliser. It was terrific. I realised watching that, it's one of the nicest things in football, isn't it? When somebody gets deep and then just completely wrong foots the entire defence by cutting the ball back. When it comes off, it looks wonderful. And that was a fine example. Stockdale saved the penalty, was great. What I didn't enjoy as much, the Fulham shirts. Which, I don't know, Barry, you saw this, yes?
Yeah, the Fulham shirts, I'm not sure what kind of material they're made of, but they were...
Cling film. tissue paper.
There was one stage, I think the camera cut to Dixon Atuhu, and you could clearly make out his six-pack and abs.
That's wonderful.
Very, very impressive they were,
but they
too.
Were still in the tunnel at the time. That's the problem. Seriously, they changed shirts at half-time, and within 5 minutes, they... And these are, when you look at Danny Murphy there with a clinging, transparent white T-shirt, it's just not nice.
No.
The other thing I was going to say that I didn't enjoy too much was Javier Hernandez, give his proper title, doing his pre-match ritual. Did you see this?
No. Sorry.
Okay, just before the game kicks off, at the moment of maximum TV attention, Javier discreetly kneels in the centre circle, spreads his arms out wide, and looks up aloft to I don't know, the sun god or the deity of his choice, invoking, presumably, their attention and support in the match to come. Extraordinary business.
I think sportsmen should be forbidden from praying or blessing themselves or just thanking the Lord in the event of...
I don't mind them doing it discreetly, but it seems an extraordinarily egotistical thing to go and kneel down in the centre circle with
the game.
It's
certainly unfair to all the atheists. I mean, what can they do?
No, but does he not say, here I am, Lord, now you may bless your chosen son... In front of, these minor...
I don't have a problem with that.
Would you do it more discreetly, like, say, Shea Given and his holy water that he puts in his goal before every game?
If people have beliefs,
etc. Where does he put it now?
I don't know.
He doesn't have a goal to put it in.
he puts it under his bench.
But this seems to be more about, look at me, I am really, really special, everybody.
Possibly, but I mean, if you're on the pitch, then if you're on the pitch and you get away with not being pulled away by a steward or something, then get away with what you can.
All right, I don't know. Bronwyn 99, you agree with me. Thanks for your post. There you go. Anyway, Man United not living up to the spectacular standard set by some of the other teams. Dropping silly points, as I say. Worrying signs there.
Also playing a far better team than the other teams.
Yeah. Well, let's have a quick word about Fulham before we finish off part one. They're looking solid, aren't they, under Mark Hughes?
I was very impressed by them. I thought they could have won the game, to be honest. United were 1-0 up at half time, but clinging on and
like a Fulham shirt on a balmy day,
exactly. Yep. And I mean, it would have been probably very unfair if United had gone on to win the game, which they, I'd say, would have if Nani hadn't shanked that penalty. Possibly another victim of the whole Samson thing, because he's got proper short back and sides now. He's got rid of his Superfly pimp look.
Yeah, the penalty was saved actually by Stockdale, who's doing really well in place of Schwarzer. The other thing about Nani seems to be following a look like Cristiano Ronaldo course. He has he's got the same Cristiano Ronaldo haircut. He's muscled up a bit, and he's standing in the same, I'm going to flex my neck muscles while the camera on me, and he's got that kind of Ronaldo concentrated frown look. Like, what are these other people doing on the pitch while I'm about to step on? When he came, I thought he seems to have consciously gone for them. No,
it's better than a look like Kieran Richardson attempt. I mean, looking at the state of his little mini pony whiff of hair at the back there.
Yeah, he's got sort of a Roberto Baggio
right look.
It doesn't work.
Oh, all right, then. Didn't work for Baggio either, I have to say.
Yeah, but Baggio was, creative hub in the Italian team.
Yeah.
Kieran Richardson is a Sunderland fullback. It's...
Oh, well then.
It's like you're obsessed with hair or something, Jim. What is this?
Barry brought it up. It was all Barry. Right, okay. Fulham, yeah, thumbs up for them. Anyway, that's it for part one. And not before time. Very shortly, we'll be talking about the Championship. All right, James Dart, Championship's underway. And my word, it's looking very exciting, isn't it? Lots of stories to come out here. QPR, Craig Bellamy, where are we going to begin?
How about QPR? Then again, they're top of the table. The only perfect record in the Championship. 3 games, 3 wins, 9 goals, none conceded. First time in 64 years that they won their first 3 games in the division. So,
wow. That Neil Warnock, eh?
That Neil Warnock. Well, I mean, he's come in and he seems to be sort of harnessing the powers of Adel Taarabt, his main sort of man in the middle of the park there. Taarabt's arguably one of the best players in the Championship right now until you had Craig Bellamy's arrival last week. Taarabt is still a fantastic player for that level. And if they can keep him fit for the rest of the season, QPR are going to be there or thereabouts because they've got more money to throw at this division than most teams around there. So you expect if they can get off to a decent start and maintain this, they're going to be able to hang around. Much the same as Cardiff, as you mentioned, that they've sort of brought in Bellamy last week, and it's a bit unfair on a lot of level for the Championship defenders. He's going to have an absolute field day in that division, and so are his teammates, so the other strikers at Cardiff, because they're going to be so busy trying to keep an eye on Bellamy that they're going to have plenty of time for themselves. And again, there's more talk that Cardiff, that there's more money to be thrown at bigger name players, even though...
Where would they find more money from?
Well, I think some of their Malaysian backers are thinking they're going to have a go at it this year. But, I mean, it's all well and good. I mean, there's a lot of money that seems to be... some money worries at Cardiff at the moment. So it seems almost a bit rich that they have the wherewithal to be able to go out and spend more.
Well, yeah, this was a hot topic of controversy we were talking about last week when the Bellamy news came through. Terrific debut from him, though.
It was. It looked like he was going to play the provider rather than sort of the star attraction, but it was, sort of almost written that he would go on.
He set up a couple and scored a free kick as well.
Scored a scream in the final couple of minutes. And, I think, was it Doncaster they were up against? Yeah.
They weren't at the races, is that right?
They weren't. But yes, Cardiff, very, very impressive performance there. I mean, it's still very early in the season, 3 games, but if they can push it on, then the money may well be invested to maintain a push for promotion.
Right, they're in second place at the moment. Ipswich, Burnley, Coventry all had strong starts as well. Sheffield United, though, under Gary Speed now, were defeated 1-0 away to Borough. And Crystal Palace... we said last week that they'd survived the winding up ordeal, but it sounds like the winding up's still going on in South London because they've only gone and signed Edgar Davids now on a pay-as-you-play deal, and apparently he wants to play, indeed, at left-back. That's an interesting choice.
What is he, 37 now? He's a figure that can possibly bring some inspiration to some of the youth players, and they've got a lot of good young talent at Palace, a bit rough around the edges here or there. It's a big name, marquee sort of name to arrive. Whether or not he'll be able to push them on much, I don't know. I have my doubts still on that one.
Well, if we learned anything during the World Cup, it's that from his punditry, he'll obviously be a very charismatic guy to have around the Crystal Palace dressing room. And it should be a scene of much giggling and guffawing.
I tell you what, speaking of the Championship, West Ham. I'm not sure what the connection might be there, but defeat to Bolton. They're having a rotten start, aren't they, the Hammers? They lost in their first game at Villa, then they get defeated 3-1 at home to Bolton. Jussi Eskelinen saving a penalty. Elmander scoring twice. Remarkable stuff. And, of course, unlikely to impress the Upton Park faithful, who are beginning to get restless in this park.
Man United and Chelsea next as well for them. Not good.
Man United away, Chelsea at home, Stoke away, and then Spurs at home. Yikes. In fact, that nice Jacob Steinberg, who was in a lot during the World Cup, reckons that West Ham will still be on nil points come October. So that's kind of official. He's a big West Ham
fan. And he's a West Ham fan.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Well, for reasons that may not be entirely unconnected to my loss of the will to live this morning, I was looking around the West Ham, a couple of West Ham fan websites, and some of them who were at the game on Saturday, as opposed to those of us who only saw highlights and were spared the full 90 minutes, were saying that there's no need to panic just yet because they played very well. But I would argue that playing very well and still losing 3-1 to Bolton at home is not a good portent for the future.
Mm. Carlton Cole was booed after that missed penalty, well, saved penalty. So Yeah, it doesn't sound too positive, especially because there's now word that Scott Parker may indeed be leaving on his way to Spurs, says this rumour here, in a swap deal for Robbie Keane.
That's not going to help them a whole lot, is it, really?
Yeah. I'm not sure if there's any substance to that.
No, I think just quickly, I think it's fair to say, I mean, Bolton are a better team this year than they were last. But nonetheless, West Ham are in a lot of trouble.
Mm. All right, then. We were mentioning worst debut ever on the subject of Joe Cole, who's really turned things around, though, after that after that early red card. But anyway, more on Liverpool a bit later on. Best debut ever, says L. Andrew Uno. He says, how about a mention for Mickey Quinn and his four-goal debut for the Toon? Did well for a fat lad, says L. Andrew Uno. Did he? He scored four.
He scored four in 1989, yeah, against Leeds United on his debut. But
all right,
not quite up there with the best debut
ever. Give us the best debut ever, then, because kayaking is about to, if you don't, James.
Oh, go on, then. I'll make myself sound clever.
Can the pod please give it up for Johan Voskamp? He scored 8 goals and provided an assist for Sparta Rotterdam in their 12-1 win against Almere City on Friday. It was his debut, too. Amazing, no?
It's pretty good, yeah. We were trying to find some other good ones. I mean, you had Ravanelli against Liverpool.
Oh.
96 hat-trick and...
Balotelli scored on his debut the other day and saved, as the Guardian's headline put it, £188 million worth of blushes in the...
I don't know if he quite did that. There's still plenty of blushes there. But I think Tony Cotti scored a hat-trick for Everton against Newcastle in 88. Shearer for Blackburn at Palace, hat-trick. And people believe... Yeah, Rooney hat-trick against Fenerbahce from Man United.
Right. The Bundesliga is underway. You did a terrific video preview of the whole thing on, the end of last week. What?
Could have shaved for it.
Well, no, I thought he looked very kind of urban, you know, no, what's the word? You know, cosmopolitan. Urbane, that's it. Quite urban as well in your urban gear. And anyway, we're wasting valuable time. Let's talk about football instead. Off you go, Rafa. Standing by.
That's the best link you can give me.
Let's talk about football instead. Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Times are ticking.
Yeah.
Come on.
Well, it was a really exciting weekend, the first weekend of the new 48th Bundesliga season.
How many 6-0s were there?
There weren't any 6-0s, I'm afraid, but there were lots of goals, lots of late drama, especially in Munich, where poor Steve McLaren came within a minute of pulling off a very creditable 1-1 draw away to Bayern before Bastian Schweinsteiger popped up. And it was a typical another last-minute Bayern Munich win. But they were very good. And that goal was fine. But if you have a chance to look on YouTube at the first goal they scored from Thomas Müller, the first goal of the season, that was an absolutely wonderful, wonderful goal. A 1-2, floated 1-2, and then he takes it, and the ball never touches the ground before he hits a sweet volley into the corner. Beautiful, beautiful goal. And against Simon Kjær, the new Danish defender who was really wanted all over Europe before the start of the season, it was a great coup for Wolfsburg to get him signed. So it was a very, very exciting game. And just all weekend, there were brilliant games. Perhaps the best one was Hamburg beating Schalke 2-1. It was the battle of the Real Madrid old boys, with Raul coming in for Schalke and, of course, Ruud van Nistelrooy for Hamburg, who scored twice. Very, very interesting storyline, because Schalke have in Magath probably the most Premier League type manager who's really in control of everything there. He's even on the board. He's signing players, selling players. The problem is he's managed to sell all his good players over the summer, and the players he's bought, with the exception of Raul, who has looked sharp in pre-season at least, he hasn't really strengthened the team. Christoph Metzelder has come back from Real Madrid, but he's been looking really terrible.
Right, who's he sold then?
He sold three out of his back four. Heiko Westermann, German international, who's now gone straight into the captaincy at Hamburg, shows you just how good and important a player he was. Bordon, who was the captain at Schalke, another big, big name. And Rafinha, the right back, who's gone to Genoa. Mm. So, you know, if you think about the fact that Schalke's surprising run to second place last year was largely built on being incredibly difficult to beat and then getting lucky on the other side with a free kick or two, they've taken the first bit out, and getting lucky with a free kick or two is not going to get you that far, especially if you're playing the Champions League in midweek. So I really fear for them, and I think Magath is going to come under a lot of pressure, especially after he saw fit to fire the guy who was in charge of fan relations there. He'd been there for, I think, nearly a decade or longer. He got rid of him because he'd made some critical comments in a newspaper article, and that didn't go down very well.
Oh, I can imagine. In other exciting Bundesliga news, Hoffenheim fought back from conceding an early goal, scoring four times in 23 minutes to crush Werder Bremen 4-1 in an impressive display of attacking football.
It was also an impressive display of knee-jerk journalism, because after the game, everybody said, "Ah, oh, look at Bremen without Özil, they're nothing, haha." And the same guy said on Wednesday when I beat Sampdoria, "You see, Özil, what a good move was it to get rid of him." So I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. And unfortunately for Bremen, that's why they never, despite playing beautiful football, end up winning that much, because they find it, A, very hard to defend, and they were really shambolic against Hoffenheim, who were pretty tasty, it must be said. Probably up there with the great games they showed us when they initially got to the league and were league leaders for quite a long time. But at the same time, they're very inconsistent, Werder. And, you know, it was just the wrong result at the wrong time, because they've got the replay, of course, on Tuesday, or the second leg.
Yeah, what do you think there? There's 3-1 up from the first leg.
Yeah, the fact that Sampdoria scored, I think, with 3 minutes to go, gave them food for thought, Bremen, because at 3-0 they would have been through. 3-1, you know, an early goal, and the way they defended, everything's possible. They should be okay, if only for the fact that they probably will score, because they always score, even if they get beaten 4-1 as they did against Hoffenheim. They always score, and then Sampdoria would of course have to score 4, which you can't really see happening.
All right. Well, they could score 3, and then we go to extra time, because
True.
Yeah. Okay. Go ahead, Barry.
No, I was going to ask if in the Bundesliga you have a team, say like Blackpool, who everyone has written off as relegation certainties at the start of the season.
It's not as extreme as Blackpool, who are really, I think, ill-equipped by their own admission. I mean, they haven't even got the stadium ready in time. It's not as bad. But St. Pauli, I think most people, despite loving them for all the sort of alternative style and all their politics, and they do things very, very differently, but also on the pitch, I think they're going to struggle. But they won 3-1 away to Freiburg. So they just continued where they left off in the second Bundesliga. I would say Freiburg are also relegation candidate, so I'm not sure how much that says about St. Pauli. But I think in terms of their positioning, I think if you'd asked all the 18 Bundesliga managers, I think most would have privately tipped them to go down.
You said that everyone sort of loves St. Pauli, but wasn't there an attack at the weekend on one of their players?
Yeah, well, everyone except Hamburg fans, of course, who don't really like their more popular left-leaning rivals. They were ambushed, St. Pauli fans. And
when you say more popular, you mean more populist, I imagine?
No, more
popular.
They
actually have more fans, do they?
Well, they're the sort of the club that everybody loves.
Oh, I see, right.
They're the Chelsea of the Bundesliga.
Yeah, no, not quite. No, they are the sort of everyone's favourite second team, and they're much loved. But no, the Hamburg thing was quite bad, because the St. Pauli fans travelled back from Freiburg, and the second goalkeeper, Benedikt Plickert, was also with them. So he actually had fans travelling with the reserve keeper on the same train. But they were all ambushed in Hamburg by Hamburg SV fans, and the police had to come. And I hope that some of these idiots will get stadium bans, because they were found to be in possession of season tickets at Hamburg.
All right. Or maybe a custodial sentence as well while we're at it, you know, attacking.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind.
Wouldn't be bad.
I wouldn't mind.
A couple of questions. Well, a question from listener Christian McR. Based on insider info, Bild top publication, compiled a list of the top players' wages in the Bundesliga. Tell you what, they're quite spicy. Frank Ribery is the top earner with 170,000 a week. Is that ring true? Yeah?
I think that's seriously underestimating actually what he's really making. There were Süddeutsche reported that Frank Ribery's on 14 million euros a year. Now, I can't do the maths quickly enough, but I think that's well over 200 grand in Premier League money. Bayern have never officially confirmed this, but I think it's very close to the truth.
Oh, okay.
Would that be before or after tax?
That's before tax.
Good. Martin De Michelis, meanwhile, has told Louis van Gaal that he doesn't want to play in Germany anymore. Are you going to make the World Cup reference, or shall I?
Go on.
No. He was the fellow who said to John Terry, if I play like that, I wouldn't go back to England.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And he then played like that. And indeed doesn't want to go back to Germany. So where's he going to go? Not Chelsea, I'm guessing.
No, he's talking to Atletico Madrid, who are stupid enough, I think, to take him off Bayern's hands. The funniest thing about this was really Van Gaal's reaction, and also the rest of the squad, because on the eve of the game, De Michelis was told, look, you're only on the bench, you might come on, you know, who knows. But he said, I'm not going to stand for this. If I'm not starting, if I'm not a regular, I'm not going to play. At which point Van Gaal said, yeah, that's okay, you can go home then. They didn't have a fallout as such, because Van Gaal said, yeah, it's all right, you know, we don't really need you. And I think the board are sort of caught in two minds, because they only have four centre-backs, one of which is still not quite fit. But in typical fashion, Van Gaal said, well, we also got this young guy from the amateur team, he can come in. Haas, we don't need Van.
The amateur team is the young team, is it?
It's the second team,
yeah. Right, okay. Brilliant stuff, Rafael. Nice one. You mentioned there Werder Bremen and Sampdoria. Of course, lots of crucial second-leg European qualifiers, etc. Let's just quickly finish off the pod then today. A quick roundup of those, chief amongst which, some might feel, would be the Champions League playoff between Tottenham Hotspur and Young Boys of Bern. 3-2 for the Swiss in the first game. I suppose going out, James.
I think they might sneak through.
Are they going those out two, with Young Boys?
Those two away goals are going to help them no end. I think they weren't fantastic at Stoke at the weekend, but they found a way to win, and Gareth Bale obviously was fantastic at the weekend.
What a goal!
It was fantastic, yes. Well, not the one he sent in with his nose from 1 yard out.
That was quite impressive. What was the other one then?
The over-the-shoulder athletic volley with his left foot, that was pretty.
How did he even get his foot that high, let alone steer the ball into the far corner?
No, you're looking at me as if I have some explanation for his technique. Now, it was a superb goal. I think he'll be a huge star in the Premier League this season. Stoke were unlucky, though. They had a goal disallowed that. And if Sean Ingle were here now, I'm sure he'd be calling for technology. But even with the benefit of technology, it was difficult to tell whether the ball crossed the line or not. What? It took Chris Kamara on goals on Sunday with a line painted on the studio floor and a football to prove that it was over the line.
Oh, magnificent. Smithy says, I'm glad someone's brought this up, because other people have mentioned this on the posting. And he said, basically, whether or not the ball had crossed the line, the fact was that Stoke had targeted Aurelio Gomez and had fouled him on that particular piece of play. And in fact, repeatedly, it seems like, according to Smithy, for his preparation for the game, Pulis quite clearly coached his team to impede Gomez whenever Stoke hoofed or hurled the ball in Tottenham's goal. He did look very shaky, didn't he, Gomez? Again, he had a bit of a relapse.
And that's not always the worst tactic to target Aurelio Gomez. Mm. I mean, he was better towards the back end of last season, but there's still teams like Stoke who are going to put a player like Gomez under massive, massive trouble.
Now, also, in the Europa League playoffs, you've got Villa, who, fresh from that 6-0 thumping, have to try and get past Rapid Vienna. It's 1-1 after the first leg. Manchester City, who did manage to get an away goal away to Timisoara. Selection problems there, though, for Roberto Mancini. Where's he going to find the 9 holding midfielders that his formation probably requires? And Liverpool are away in Turkey against Trabzonspor. Now, they do have a 1-0 lead from the home leg of this, but it's not an easy place to travel to, is it? And there's all sorts of uncertainty over Liverpool. What do you think, Barry?
Well, I was very impressed with Trabzonspor in the first leg. I thought they did well. They took the game to Liverpool. Probably unlucky to lose, to be honest, but I would if someone put a gun to my head and made me bet on it, I'd bet on Liverpool to go through, but I don't think it'll be that easy for them.
Right, okay. They're a well-organised side, eh?
Yeah, but as you say, Turkey, very difficult place to go to.
Right, okay. Joe Cole, how is he going to improve his disastrous start so far?
Well, he could score an own goal. I think that's the only thing he's left to do.
Okay. All right, wouldn't put it past him. And just finally, on the subject of Liverpool, because there's a lot of transfer rumours still circulating around the club. Aquilani, still doing his medicals with Juventus, but looks like he's gone there.
How long does an Alberto Aquilani medical take?
I would imagine
four or five days.
If you were signing Aquilani, I think you'd want to spend as long as possible just checking all his bits were in.
Hopefully a bit quicker than a Loic Remy medical.
Oh, yeah.
Given that he sort of passed his medical and then was found the next day to have a heart defect.
So. Ooh.
Yeah, not the best medical, I don't know.
No, indeed not. Same thing happened with Kanu, of course, at Inter. Anyway, Electronic Math, have any other club in the league spent as much as Liverpool on players they then freeze out the team and usually loan to someone else? Just off the top of my head, says Electronic Math. Keane, Babel, Riera, Morientes a while ago now, Aquilani. Also looks like Dirk Kuyt may be on his way out, a very different category of player. But that would be a huge...
been linked with Inter.
Yeah, he has.
Yeah, I mean, the Inter story with Mascherano and Kuyt has been going for months now. Why is there nothing happening, as far as you know?
As far as I know, don't know very much, but Mascherano is not a player they necessarily need. Dirk Kuyt, I think, is much more a player who would fill a role in that Inter team. And I think that's why that story has had more legs. They've tried to do a deal by sending Victor Obinna, a striker, to Liverpool in return. Liverpool said they don't want to know. They want cash. So I think that's the question for Inter, who probably feel that they don't want to splash out a massive amount. At least that's what they've said. I think they were hoping to maybe use Benitez's good relation with these players. So I personally think Roy Hodgson will do everything in his power not to lose Dirk Kuyt, who's such a fabulously useful player for Liverpool, but I can see how he would be a more important player for Inter than Mascherano. Anyway, there you go. Super. Are Liverpool going to be in the Europa League next week, Raphael?
Yes.
Barry?
Yeah. I don't really care.
Lovely. And James Dart?
Yes.
All right. Excellent news there. Very good. That's it for today's Football Weekly. Many thanks.
Can I just say?
Go ahead.
They're probably going to be in Europa League next year as well.
That's possible if you're optimistic. But anyway, I will be back with another fresh crew of pod types on Thursday with Football Weekly Extra. But in the meantime, it's many, many thanks to James Darr, Barry Glendenning, and to Raphael Honigstein, producer Ben Green, and you, the listener. See you on Thursday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.